So I brought a bundle of what I consider to be one of the most productive crops in the garden, right up there with those tiger collards. I just started harvesting these. This is a lacinato kale. And try a bite.
That's pretty.
Some people call it dinosaur kale, lacinato kale, and I usually only have to plant this twice a year. You plant it in the fall and it'll grow all the way through the spring, and then I'll plant another crop of it and in the spring. And last year mine didn't bolt at all. So
yeah, I got some growing too. This mine's probably a little bit nicer than yours is. But we eat some kale soup the other night, and that's become a favorite staple at our house is kale soup.
Kale soup.
And I like it a lot.
I like kale soup. I like a bunch of sausage in mine.
Yep.
So, good stuff there.
And that is an heirloom.
Yep, it is. It is. Lacinato or dinosaur kale. Let's say hey to everybody.
What?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us tonight. Got a really good show planned. We're going to talk about fertilizing one of the most popular crops in the vegetable garden. We're going to have our show and tell segment. Before we get into any more show and tell, I do want to remind everybody, this is the last episode to enter for our big drawing giveaway show next week. So this is episode 51, our big 1 year anniversary
52.
Is next week.
Yep.
If you want to be entered to win, you can have an entry every week. So you'll have to either share it on Facebook or put a comment on Facebook, or you can comment on the video on YouTube. So three ways to be entered there, and you can have up to three entries from the last three shows. I will mention this, if you're one that doesn't always watch the show live or when it first airs, you want to at least get your comment in by Tuesday. We'll probably cut off because we have to have time to get all those names printed off in a basket for the show. So we'll probably cut that off on Tuesday or so.
That sounds good.
For the entries.
Sounds good to me. Is that the best you can do?
Is that the best thing
to do? Is that the best you can do?
I've been out there and seen your onions.
Now, yeah, mine's growing pretty good. Now, mine's got a little bit left.
So I brought these to show. I've got three. I saw where Chad on the Row by Row group, he couldn't take it anymore.
I've seen that.
I've got three that's fell over like this. And I do like Chad did in his pictures. When they fall over,
it's time
I go pull them up and I just lay them on the grass right there by the garden. And the reason we do that, so they'll cure, you want this to dry up.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a pretty good representation of what it looks like when you get ready to pull them right there.
Yeah.
That top is brown, dying out, and it's just flipped over.
So before we put them underneath the barn, we want this right here to be crispy, and that's close to it. This one's been sitting out in the sun for a couple days, and we want this to get kind of crispy. Now, some people will cut these off when they store them, but I don't.
I don't either. Never have.
And one of the reasons I don't like to do that is because on my storage rack, if I just lay this bulb up there, they'll roll around bad. But if I lay these down there, it keeps everything in place.
Have you ever seen the people that weave them together?
That's yeah, that seems like a lot of work.
I've tried that before. I'm not a real good weaver.
So this one, I brought this one to show you what most of mine look like. This kind of big softball size. This one, you still, it hadn't fallen over yet, but I wanted to pull it just to show you that I did some big onions out there.
And that's a good size. I mean, I like that size.
If you can grow them all that size right there, there ain't nothing wrong with that. So onions are starting to fall over. I go out there every day and just check for a few. And
I'm thinking it's probably going to be the first of next week on mine. I'm making that prediction.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, what's different about me this year than previous years, I got more garden space. In previous years, I've kind of been in a hurry to get my onions out of there to plant something else. But this year I can be patient, just get them as they fall over, and that's gonna work good for me. I am gonna plant sweet potatoes where my onions are, so when I do get all my alliums out, elephant garlic, leeks, onions, I am gonna plant some sweet potatoes here come May.
Well, May? You gonna plant them in May?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And get them a little earlier this year.
All right.
How about you? What's going on
I'm probably gonna wait till, I may get me a cover crop in the meantime, wait about June to plant mine.
You're going to squeeze in a cover crop.
I may squeeze in a cover crop. I've been thinking about that. Squeeze in something like buckwheat, and then plant my potatoes in June instead of May. Now, last year, I planted around the 4th of July and had a bumper crop. We had a really wet year, so I'm going to jump it up a little bit, not to May like you're going to do. It'll be interesting to see who comes out on top on this thing if you go May and I go June.
Yeah, Deep South Homestead, they always plant in May, and I think I'm going to go ahead and get mine in. And the only disadvantage of that is it's going to be hotter when you dig them.
Yep.
If you plant them in June, you can dig them in November once it's cooled off a little bit. Let's see, what else do we got going on here? I brought a couple things to show.
To share.
A couple products to share that I really like that we don't sell and probably never will sell, but that I really like. And the first one I'm going to show you is this thing right here. And I think this one's made, this is a Gilmore one, but there's a, I think there must be a Japanese or Chinese company that makes these and private labels them. These little fireman top nozzles here, man, I really like them. I had one several years ago, and one of the youngins left it out in the yard, and I run over it with the mule and broke it. But if you're hand watering crops, row crops and stuff, this thing puts out a heap of water and is really, really nice for hand watering. But it also got some really good pressure on it for washing carrots. I used a bunch for washing carrots and beets this past weekend. And I like it's just easy flip on and flip off. So if you ain't never tried one of these fire hose kind of nozzles, I would highly recommend them.
I've never tried one.
And then the second thing, so I'm kind of a knife lover, knife guru. And when it comes to kitchen knives, I'm kind of interested in those. So I saw this company, and it's called Misen, M-I-S-E-N, advertised on Facebook. And I'd seen a bunch of their ads, and they had a bunch of really positive comments on their ads, people saying that they bought their knives and really liked them. It seemed like genuine testimonials. And so I looked it up, and it's basically the, what they advertise themselves as is you get what would normally be a $250 chef's knife for about 50 or 60 bucks. So I said, well, let's try it out. So I bought a couple of them.
So you pay 50 a piece for them or 50 for the
pair? No, well, the big one was probably like 60 and that one was probably like 40. But they got a pair knife. They got all kind of different sizes, but I kind of like these two. And it's really good steel. They don't tell you what if it's what it actually is. They just say Japanese steel, but
we're assuming this is a Japanese company.
So
that name like that. This guy, it's a full tang, which is interesting, and it's got good weight to it.
Yeah, I have really been pleased, and they were super sharp out of the box. Still are. I haven't figured out what's going to be the best way to sharpen them, but really good knives. So
M-I-S-E-N.
Yeah.
If you want to look it up,
you want to check out some good knives that that are Travis approved. M-I-S-E-N, and I think it's M-I-S-E-N.co, not com. A lot of those .com domains are starting to be used up, so got those. So wanted to share those two. I got my peppers planted this past weekend.
Yep, we do too.
Me and Bubby planted peppers, and then I got to get some sunflowers in soon. And then
got mine in.
I got some giant ones in the greenhouse that are ready to go, and I'm going to direct seed some in a video. Gonna make me a little pro mix mix
pro,
or pro mix. Cut pro cut mix.
I got some plums planted and I got something else planted. I don't remember
exactly. plum sunflowers,
but I don't remember what the other ones are. They feast start blooming. I'll figure it out. I have that tendency sometimes. I plant stuff and I don't remember what I planted.
Yeah, that can happen. Now on the garlic, has your garlic started
nope. Not yet. I looked at it this morning. It has not.
Mine started blooming.
And you're supposed to pick those blooms off, they tell us, right?
I don't know. Asking you.
Yep. Supposed to pinch those off. And mine have not this morning. They're starting to yellow just a little bit. But if my memory serves me right, it's normally about 2 to 3 weeks after I pull my onions when I pull my elephant garlic.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So pinch the blooms off?
Pinch the blooms off. Scapes, okay. This is what they call them.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take your advice on that. All right, so on this week's show, you did a video with your gardening, Greg.
Tomatoes.
Talking about tomatoes, or as I say, tomatoes. Everybody likes to make fun of me not pronouncing that last syllable there. Tomatoes, and today we want to talk about fertilizing tomatoes and fertilizing requirements and fertilizer program. So what we did, excuse me, got a frog in my throat. What we did is we found a published study that provided kind of a fertilization schedule and recommendations for a huge, large field there of tomatoes. And we kind of broke it down and make it more understandable for the everyday gardener backyard, kind of put it in, yeah, in quantities that we can understand.
You know, tomatoes are the most popular thing grown in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves to grow a tomato plant. Just about everybody loves a good tomato. So it's really popular, and it's not the easiest one out there to grow. It's probably one of the toughest ones to really be successful, I mean, truly successful at, and to grow some good tomatoes. And that's the reason we want to go over this today, because the fertility on tomatoes is very important.
Yes.
What I see most time with people that's just starting out growing tomatoes is two things. They don't think they have to spray them. And then the second thing is they don't fertilize them enough.
Mm-hmm.
They have high fertility requirements, and you got to put that love on them or they're just not going to produce.
And as we'll talk about here in a minute, tomatoes like to be what we call spoon fed. So they don't just like kind of a one-time application. They like to be able to, you know, feed them on a regular basis.
And you know, man, there's all kind of stuff out there on the internet. This fella called me the other day. Now this is exactly what he told me. He said, I planted my tomatoes, Greg. I dug me a deep hole. I put a dead fish down there, two aspirins, and some eggshells.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. And it took all I could do. But now he was serious. He had read that online somewhere that was what
it matter
I'm
what
talking
kind
about
of fish
a,
it is?
A dead fish. And at first I said, well, you know, that's good. We probably need to do something a little bit different. First of all, that dead fish is not going to be available to that plant this year.
Right.
It's going to have to be broke down. And everybody wants to put eggshells in there when they plant their tomatoes. Well, eggshells is a wonderful source of calcium. The problem is it's going to take years for it to break down so it's available to that plant. So putting them eggshells in that hole of that plant ain't going to do nothing for your tomatoes that year, because it's got to break down and be available to that plant. And it just takes a long time for that to happen. But somewhere along the road, you know, line, they have heard or read this, and that's the reason everybody does. There's a lot of misconceptions out there.
I see people all the time putting Tums down.
Tums, yep. Now, Tums would be more, I think Tums would be more available than eggshells would be. But
yeah,
that's a poor way to try to get calcium to your plant. There's a lot better ways.
Yeah, I'm going to save my Tums for heartburn, yep, and I'm going to use some gypsum for my calcium.
Yep.
So let's dig into this a little bit. So before we talk about fertilization requirements, we need to just basically talk about pH for a little bit, because if your pH is not right, doesn't matter what kind of fertilization or what kind of nutrients you put out there, they're not going to be able to be absorbed by the plant. And so optimal pH range for tomatoes, 6.2 to 6.8.
Yep. And you want to put this out 3 months ahead of time.
We're talking about lime.
We're talking about lime. You want to put your lime out 3 months ahead of time. And lime also has calcium in it. It would be a good part of your calcium for your tomatoes. Now, calcium is immobile in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do when you put that lime out is you want to till it or hare it in, or you want to incorporate that soil in the top 6 to 8 inches of that soil. That way it lowers your pH in that root area where your roots are growing, but also you're putting that calcium right there so them roots can pick it up and go with it.
And this can vary from sandy soils to really dense soils, but the general rule is around a ton of lime per acre to raise the pH one point. So say from 5.5 to 6.5.
You can get your soil pH there. It can make this thing a lot more complicated than that, because they always talk about soil pH buffer. Mm-hmm. But that's a good rule of thumb to go by.
One ton to raise it 1 point.
Right.
One ton per acre. And you can break that down to whatever your square footage is and kind of figure that out. All right. So now let's get into the actual fertilization of tomatoes. So tomatoes are one of those things that benefit from a complete fertilizer. You know, it's not like...
What is a complete fertilizer?
So what I call a complete fertilizer is going to have equal amounts or proportions of your three big macronutrients, N, P, and K, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So equal amounts of those, what I call a complete fertilizer.
Now, other people, balanced fertilizer.
Balance is probably a better word. Complete would suggest having some micros and stuff. So a balanced fertilizer, equal amounts like a 10-10-10, mm-hmm, a 20-20-20, something like that. Tomatoes need equal parts of all those things, or those major nutrients.
We're talking conventional stuff. If you was using a good chicken litter or good compost, a lot of your chicken manures and stuff have something like a 3-1-2, something like that. So it's pretty much balanced if you have access to that. But for today's, pretty much we're going to skip that and go into the conventional part of it. I got some chicken litter this year that I've been using, so I had to take that away from what I would use in conventional fertilizer. So if you're using some of those manures and stuff, you got to take that into consideration. But we're going to talk about today pretty much strictly if you have to use conventional fertilizers.
Right. So the general rule from what the studies say is for nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, they recommend at the lower end of the scale 150 pounds per
units.
150 pounds per acre of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Now for really sandy soils, it gets up into 200 pounds per acre, but we'll standardize it and just say 150 pounds per acre of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Mm-hmm. Now, the way we want to apply this nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium is a little different. So, what they recommend is for your phosphorus that you apply all of that pre-plant.
Why is that?
Because it's going to help to establish a really good root system for those transplants.
Also, it's doesn't move in the soil, so you're not going to lose it. A lot of nitrogen and potassium can somewhat leach out. That phosphorus is not going to leave. So you can put it there pre-plant and not have to worry about it going anywhere. You already got it out there ready for the plant to be used. Boom, you're good.
Yeah. So that
if you don't use it, it's still there.
If we take those numbers I was doing earlier, 150 pounds per acre, not many people grow an acre of tomatoes. If we break that down to 1,000 square feet, we're looking at 3.5 pounds per 1,000 square feet.
Now we're talking about actual nitrogen. So we're not talking about pounds of fertilizer. We're talking about actual pounds of nitrogen in that formulation, or some people call it units.
Okay. So say you want to put 3.5 pounds of phosphorus per pre-plant per 1,000 square foot.
Okay.
They recommend dissolving this in a solution and putting a half pint of that liquid solution on each plant. So for the example they provided, they recommend taking the fertilizer, something like a 1-3-0, something that's high in phosphorus, and mixing a half pound of fertilizer per 10 pounds of water.
Oh, this gets complicated.
And then applying a half pint of that. But we'll just say 3.5 pounds per 1,000 square foot. Probably going to work better if you dissolve it in water and
so let's just say here that a fellow has got 50 pounds of 10. Mm-hmm. That means he has 5 actual pounds of phosphorus. So he's got enough to do 1,500 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the phosphorus is going down pre-plant, and then the potassium and the nitrogen is what we need to spoon feed, okay? And let's pull out our fancy chart here. So I did some calculations for us, got a little dirt on there. Okay, so here we've got nitrogen, we've got potassium, okay? We've got the total amount of fertilizer we're gonna need throughout the duration of that plant. The studies recommend putting a third to a half of this total amount down pre-plant and then spoon feeding the rest, okay? Now we're gonna assume here that our tomato plants, we're talking about determinant plants here for the most part, we're gonna assume our tomato plants have a 14 week lifespan, which is probably pretty fair and normal. So, because we're needing a balanced fertilizer, we're needing 3.5 pounds of each of these per 1,000 square foot. We didn't put the phosphorus on here because we've already added that pre-plant. Now, pre-plant for these two, we're gonna add a third to a half of that, and I just to come upon a round number, we'll say 1.5. So 1.5 pounds per 1,000 square foot. And then, for those 14 weeks, we're gonna spoon feed the other 2 pounds, 3.5 minus 1.5. So we're gonna spoon feed those other 2 pounds. And to do that, some of these commercial guys are doing it daily, but that's not really feasible for the home gardener. So we'll say weekly.
I do it weekly.
Weekly, you're giving it a third of a pound up until those 14 weeks.
Right.
So that's your fertilization program right there for tomatoes.
But you know what? There's different types of fertilizer. There's different types of nitrogen. And tomatoes prefer a particular kind of nitrogen, a more balanced fertility, which includes the ammonia, includes the urea and the nitrate, and they are particularly fond of the nitrate nitrogens.
Right. So let's talk about nitrogen real quick. So we've got urea, nitrogen. Go ahead and grab that. We've got ammonia and we've got nitrate. All of these have to be broken down to this.
And those are your three major sources of nitrogen that are commercially available.
So this is what's actually absorbed, okay? This is a larger molecule than this, This is larger than this. This is what actually is absorbed by the plant.
And they're all a little bit different. Urea is more stable in the environment than ammonia is. And ammonia is probably, we see there's got a quicker chain on there than the urea does.
Right. So in the cycle here, if you were to put just urea out, what happens is this has to be broken down to this, and this has to be broken down to this. If you put just ammonia, or what we call ammoniacal nitrogen out there, it has to be broken down to this. So just know that if you're putting this or this out, it's going to be broken down to this. If you're putting just nitrate out, it's going to hit it pretty quick.
Yep. So the chain there. So when you have these three, all three of these in a fertilizer, then you have different chains of release.
Right, which is going to give you a kind of a steady flow of nitrogen release.
Now, we've all been familiar with Miracle-Gro. I've been using it for 40 years. It's been around a long time, and it's blue. Used to sell it at the chain stores and these little hose-end things. They got smarter, and they're doing it a little different now. But this is the exact same stuff that we sell. We do a package of it, and we call ours the 20-20-20. And what makes this work so great,
on tomatoes especially.
On tomatoes, we used to use it in the landscape on bed and flowers, bed and plants, all stuff, is, I'm going to have to get my glasses here. It has all three of those nitrogen sources in it. It has ammoniacal.
Or ammonia.
Ammonia, excuse me, I can't see here. 3.5% ammonia. It has 5.5% nitrate, and it has 11% urea.
So all three.
All three. And not only is those chains on those nitrogens different, they release at different times when taken up in the plant, but the plant reacts differently to those, all three of those differently too.
So it's going to give you a quick hit and also some kind of slow bleeding hit there.
Right.
Which is going to be nice. Now, the experts do say, as far as your nitrogen application, and you'd be plenty fine with that, but that the no more than 50%, correct me if I'm wrong on this, should be ammoniacal nitrogen.
Well, no, it's the other way around. You should have 50% or more of nitrate nitrogen.
Okay. Yeah, so at least 50% or more of this, so not 50% or more of this.
Right.
And the reason for that is, and I've left out a little plus, a sign right there. Ammonia is a cation, which is just means a positive ion, but so are things like potassium, calcium, and magnesium. And so if you've got too much ammonia, they're going to compete with your calcium and your magnesium uptake. And we all know if you don't have enough calcium, you get blossom end rot.
So the takeaway that is, you guys out there using ammonia nitrate, and a lot of people do use ammonia nitrate side dress the corn with. Be careful using ammonia nitrate side dress your tomatoes with. It's probably a better product than ammonia nitrate, because for blossom, it ties back to blossom end rot. For blossom end rot, you want to use the nitrates more than you do with the ammonia, and that will help with that blossom end rot.
And if you can find you some calcium nitrate.
Yeah, you could hit it with calcium nitrate. We like to use our Chilean nitrate, but calcium nitrate is a good one too.
So don't put too heavy of this on there, or else you're going to have some calcium uptake issues, because you could have plenty of calcium in your soil, but you had too much ammonia there, and it's never going to get taken up by the plants. Okay, so just to recap, equal parts, just like 2020, we want a balanced fertilizer, and we want 3.5, 3.5, 3.5 per 1,000 square foot. We're gonna put all the phosphorus down pre-plant. We're gonna put a half of this down pre-plant, and we're gonna spoon feed it every week. And using an injector like through a drip system is a great way to do that.
Yeah, and sometimes I get tired, I'll take my sprayer, put me a cup full in my sprayer, take my nozzle off, and I just band it with that. Now here's what I do on my fertility program.
Okay.
I make it a point to do it once a week, and I have a day set aside that I do it on.
Okay.
Like Mondays. Every Monday is my fertilizer day.
And I have, whether you need to water or not?
Whether I need to water or not, doesn't make any difference.
Well, if it just rained 2 inches.
And now if it rained 2 inches, that if it just had rained 2 inches, it wouldn't bother me. Now if it was fixing to rain 2 inches, that would bother me.
Okay.
I might have to redo it, but if it's already rained, I don't have an issue with that.
Okay.
So I take a Monday's my fertilizer day because I have a tendency to forget days sometime what I did 3 or 4 days ago. So I always know Monday's my fertilizer day. I got fertilizer on Monday. And that helps me keep up with it, makes it simple.
That works. That works. I try to do mine consistently like that, but I don't like to run my drip system if the soil's real saturated. So I'm a little bit more flexible with mine. But you're having a day.
You're talking about if you got a good rain, you don't want to run your drip system. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to inject because I don't need any more water out there.
Right. Right.
I feel like I might be over diluting my fertilizer. So.
And that's the perfect time maybe you do that band system like I do sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Before we wrap up on the fertilizer deal, and we won't spend too much time on this, but I do want to give a little teaser. What we didn't talk about today was micronutrients, things like boron, magnesium, stuff like that.
Sulfur.
And we probably need to devote a whole show to that, so we won't dig on that too much. But we do got this new product alert. New product coming out, and we've been using this stuff for about 2 years, and we finally got it so we can make it available to you guys. We call it MicroBoost, and this is a micronutrient supplement. And I've been using this on beets, and it works really good. Beets need a little extra boron. So this is going to give you a lot of those micronutrients that plants, that they're essential to plants, but they only need them in very small quantities.
Yeah, you can inject this through your injector.
It works great through the injector.
Or you can band like I'm talking about through a sprayer. And for the last 2 years, every time I fertilized, I put some of that in there.
Yeah. So every time I put my 20-20-20 in my Easy Flow injector, I'll usually put a cup and a half to 2 cups of this in there.
And you're covering all your bases there. You're covering all your micros and your minors.
So this is not on the site yet. Probably won't be as of the airing of this show, but it should be in the next week or so. So stay on the lookout for that. If you're on our email list, check it out. We'll have it.
I don't think there's nothing on the market like it.
I don't think so either. And that was kind of
That's our one reason for bringing it on. That's a one-shot deal there. It covers everything.
That's right. And we'll have this in gallon and also in quart sizes for you guys with big or small gardens. And this stuff, it's not that costly, but it's really, really effective for your garden. So be on the lookout for that. And then let's answer some questions. So before we get into that, if you have any questions about tomato fertilizer, anything with tomatoes, how you should apply the fertilizer, any of that, put those in the comments. As always, we'll be glad to get to them on next week's show. We've got a couple questions from last week's show that we want to answer. And if we answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com and we'll be glad to send you a nice little prize. So what do we have here? We've got Jim, says he bought some rattlesnake beans from us this year. Thank you, Jim. And wants to know, do you plant on each side of the trellis? Thank you for all your info each week.
So I planted me a row of rattlesnake beans this year, and I always like to plant some pole beans, and this is the way I do it. I plant my rattlesnake beans, and we had this conversation the other day off camera, but I plant my rattlesnake beans directly on top of my drip tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they start coming up, I put my trellis up. I use T-post and I use cow panels for my trellis. But I raise my cow panels about 3 or 4 inches off the ground. And then I let those rattlesnake beans come up and they grab a hold of that cow panel and they go to it. The reason I raise those cow panels 3 to 4 inches off the ground is so I don't put them in the dirt and so that the bottoms won't rust off on me. I don't have that problem with the bottoms rusting. And it doesn't take no time for them to file in the panel and they go straight up. So to answer your question, Jim, I plant directly underneath my cow panel, my trellis.
I wonder if that rusting is a soil chemistry issue because, so I do mine similar. I plant them on top of the drip tape, but I put my panels on the dirt. And I've never had a single one of mine rust.
They will, over a period of time, they will. Sooner or later, when you put metal to the ground, now they're galvanized, so you may have to wear that galvanized off first, but if you put metal to the ground, you can write this down if you want to. Eventually, it will rust.
Okay. Now, I don't leave them there no longer than I have to, but I haven't had any rust so far. As far as planting on both sides, I have tried that before with some other pole crops. You can do it. The problem is you're going to get so much foliage there, this can be hard to get in there and see and pick everything.
Or keep it weeded. I mean, with that single line underneath there, mine's pretty easy to weed.
Right. So you put yours on, you basically hang your fence right over the top of them.
Yep.
Mine's to the side of it a little bit, and I kind of help them, train them when they're young and they understand how
well,
to crawl
up there. As we're speaking right now, mine's probably up halfway on the trellis right now.
Wow.
They are growing like crazy.
All right. And then our second question, what do we got there?
From Nano Giant. He says, do you reuse your drip tape year after year, or is it one season and it's done?
Okay, that's kind of two or three questions in one there. I don't reuse it year after year, but it's not one season and done because we have four seasons. We're growing in all four seasons. And so I'll reuse a piece of tape up to four times sometimes. And this works really well if all your rows are, all my rows are pretty standardized between 35 and 40 feet, so I can reuse those pieces of tape really easily. I don't ever try to store it and save it. One reason, I don't have really a good way of doing it, and I don't know of a great way to do it that is not super time consuming. When you think about it, this stuff on the rolls we sell is around 5 cents a foot. If time's worth anything to you, it's not really worth the time to try to store it. So what I would say, use it in spring, reuse it in the fall, and replace it next spring.
Yeah, your trunk line and your drip tape are viewed as disposables, and all your fittings and all that will last you a long, long time. So the only thing you really got to replace is your main line and your drip tape.
And I've been using the same piece of main line for 3 or 4 years now, and it's got whole goop plugs just lined up all in it. So you don't necessarily have to replace the main line if you got your goop plugs and can plug them up. But you reuse it as much as you can, but as far as finding a way to store it, I don't know that that's the best use
or to of roll it up. A lot of people mention rolling it up. I haven't found a good way to do that. Now, I've moved mine out of the way before.
Yeah.
And then tilled up my garden, my spot, and then come back and laid it back down. That's not too bad.
No.
But that rolling it up and reusing it, that doesn't sound like too much fun to me.
Me either. All right. So, get your entries in for our big giveaway. We're going to give away lots of good stuff next week's show. Make sure you tune in so you can see if you won or not. And we will see you guys then.
Take care.